Blog Talk Radio.
I don't mind if you got something nice to say about me. I enjoy an accolade like the rest. And you could take my picture and hang it in.
Good morning and welcome to Solutions Live Personal Edition. I'm your host, Chickie Fitzgerald, coming to you from Tampa, Florida. Solutions provides practical advice from authors and experts on a wide range of topics for professionals to help you leave your legacy. Thursday lineup begins with Real Life Renovations with my co-hosts Phil and Amy Parham. At 10:30, Financial Health, 11 a.m., Giving and Faith in the Marketplace, and at 11:30, Intellectual Gumbo, where I'll do a review of the week with my co-host Chris Bradshaw. Stick around for that and add some spice to your day. Well, good morning. It is Thursday, the 9th of April, and I am indeed coming to you from sunny Tampa, Florida, which is not all that unusual. Our sponsor today is the International Medical Fund, and it is an interesting partnership that we have this morning. We are going to be starting with our show with Phil and Amy and talking about real-life renovations. But we're going to be putting our financial health show on hold today and doing two segments on giving, which will be co-sponsored by Kids for Humanity. And we're going to be talking to some amazing teens from Fordson High School in a suburb of Detroit, Michigan, Dearborn. And then we are going to be talking to the country director from Jordan, Chris Skopak, who just in and of himself is an amazing individual. But what he's going to tell you is about the emergency response in Gaza, which he was responsible for in his role, and the money that was raised by these kids in Michigan. So we're going to have an amazing time at both 10:30 and 11, and then my co-host Chris Bradshaw and I will wrap things up at 11:30. So let me get Amy on the air, and I believe she has a guest with her. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning, Chickie. Yeah, I'm real, real excited because I know in the last show we talked about Lolo, our assistant who's come to live with us. She just really felt like she wanted to help us with, you know, getting our real-life renovations off the ground and helping us with all the little things that we have a hard time finding time to do every day. And so she came with us. And our story is that we met her in the casting call line for the show. We all tried out at the same time. We went on, as you know, to make the show, and we kept in touch for the year. And then we met back up at the finale, and it was, you know, it was so exciting to see each other. And then she came to my house for New Year's Eve and approached me about coming to help us. Well, she, of course, we've gone through this transformation of losing 256 pounds, and she had not, you know, lost anything over the years. So we said, well, we'll try to help you in your weight loss process. And she has, I'm so proud of her. She has just really taken the bull by the horns, and she's lost over 40 pounds now, so since she's been here. So we're
Bravo,
real proud of
Lolo.
Her.
Lolo.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So anyway, but, you know, I want her to kind of, because if I say it, people think, oh, you're just saying that, you know, you were on the show's the magic trick, you know, this kind of thing. But I want Lolo to talk about, you know, the changes that she's made in her life that have really helped her to, you know, see this, you know.
Well, terrific. And I think we have Philip on the phone, too. Philip, are you
there? Hey, everybody.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chickie.
Well, Chris,
I'm here.
You caught us right at the right time. We are getting ready with your Lolo.
I love my Lolo. I love my Lolo. I want to hear her little success story for everybody.
So, Lolo, give me a little bit of background on, you know, what brought you to the casting call line. And, you know, sounds like it was the hand of God himself who brought you guys all together.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I've basically been overweight my entire life, and it's been a slow progression of just being a little bit chubby, a little bit chunkier, and then just slowly heavier and heavier and heavier. And I actually was one day got on the scale and was like, oh, my gosh, I'm almost 300 pounds. How am I going to ever, you know, live a life overweight like this. I've got to do something now. And I've always watched the TV show The Biggest Loser, loved it, you know, basically sleep, eat, drink, everything Biggest Loser. Like, I was just, you know, I would sit and watch it and just cry and be like, oh, my gosh, this is, like, my only hope. And so I went to a casting call with my best friend. We were broke as can be, but we scrounged up some change and decided we would head up to Atlanta, Georgia for the casting call. We ended up getting a call back and met Philip and Amy. And, you know, that whole weekend went by, and I wasn't sure if we were going to ever make the show, but I had decided, you know, regardless of if I get on the show, I want to change my life. It's going to be easier, I thought, you know, to be on the show, but I've just got to make this change. And I was just actually able to allow that to happen by being here with Philip and Amy, with their help and support of other people who are trying to change their life as well. And like you said, it was an act of God that he brought us together. Sometimes I think that was the whole reason I auditioned for the show, was so that we all would be together. I'm here to help them. They're here to help me. And it just worked out. And I've just started this journey. And
well, it's amazing how that happens.
Yep.
It was kind of crazy, too, for us. From we had been with Lolo in the casting call line in February, and I like that what she said. I just felt like I ought to buy him lunch. We bought her lunch, and that was a blessing because they just came kind of on faith. So it was really neat how we all stood in line together. And then we just loved those two girls, and we stayed in touch with them and emailed and called, and we would call each other every Tuesday night, you know, when we got on the show. And then it was so weird for us. I hope this is okay that I say this, just to see Lolo. And, you know, she came out to the finale, and we had lost all this weight, and we had been through this major change. And I think that really just kind of inspired her to change too. And it was kind of like, you know, Amy, help me out, what I'm trying to say.
Kind of ironic that we started at the same place, and then a year or 7 months later.
Not even a year, it was 7 months.
Yeah, we meet up again in person, and we've gone through this, you know, change because of the show, and Lola is kind of a little bit in the same place as far as her weight and everything. So it was like, it was really.
But then for her, too, I think she probably realized that she can make that change by seeing that, you know, we're real people.
Right.
She was somebody she could put a face on, you know, and we struck up that conversation, and she became our assistant. We said, hey, we pay in cereal, you know, we feel like we've got a mandate to go out and tell people this good news, you know, and I think it would be selfish of us to not share what changed our life, you know, that's the way we look at it. So, and then we started just putting these principles in place, and Lola said, hey, I want to help you guys. I see what you're doing. She moved in with us, and it's just been the perfect fit. And Lola the other day told me, she said, Philip, I'm so glad that I'm not on a diet. And I said, well, I'm glad you're not on a diet too, because she's just adopted basic changes in her life. And then our trainer has taken her on as a special project, and everybody loves her. And the people who work with us, they want to help Lolo, and I think the 40-something pounds she's lost in the 10 weeks or whatever she's been with us has been phenomenal. And just to see her whole outlook on life change just in a short amount of time, and just that hope that I think she has now as far as her weight. Lola's always been a positive, encouraging, great person, but just to see that just the energy she has is amazing. And we get to see that face-to-face what we're touting actually works.
Right, right. And Lolo, you know, from your perspective, you know, I think it's really heartening to hear that you watched this show for a long time but still, you know, didn't get up and do anything about it, because there are so many of us who are in that same place and who really need the impetus to, you know, that one thing. And now we can't all move in with Phil and Amy, although we might like to. You know, can you just give us the first thing that made you actually not only engage in the principles that they were talking about, from eating to working out and just the whole change in attitude, but what was the one thing, you know, that gave you the hope that you could actually do it yourself?
Well, actually, it's funny that you say that as far as like a hope or a inspiration or something, because I always tell people that I always expected this like snap or something to come over me to just say, okay, you can do this, start today, you know, and I was waiting for that big leap of something to come over me and say, okay, today's the day, you're going to do it, and it never came. I mean, I wanted to be thin because, you know, I wanted to be able to shop regular, like, you know, be able to go shopping with my girlfriends and not worry about, okay, well, I can look at the accessories while you guys look at the pants or the shirts. And I wanted to be able to do things like fly on an airplane without having to ask for a seatbelt extender or something like that, you know.
Right.
And it wasn't even so much as far as for anything except for that. I was really, truly concerned about my health. I want to be a mom one day, you know, and be able to go outside and play ball with my kids. And I knew that I wasn't headed towards that at all. But that little spark that I was talking about never actually came. And I finally just decided I want it, and I know I want it, but I'm just going to have to actually do it. And when I actually started to do it, I just made myself for a solid week, solid 2 weeks. And then that's when it actually came. Like, that's when I was like, okay, I can do this. And it just stuck, and I've been, you know, going towards it. And just like I went hiking the other day, and I look up at this huge mountain, and I think, there's no way I'm going to climb to the top of this mountain. So I look down at my feet. I look down at my feet, and I'm just like one rock at a time, one step at a time. And I walked up, and I got to the top, and I looked back down. I was like, oh, my gosh, I made it. And I feel like that's how I have to look at my weight loss as well. One step at a time, 1 pound at a time. Don't look, oh, my gosh, I've got 100 pounds to lose. Look at the fact that, you know what, I just lost 2 pounds this week. It's 2 pounds, but it's 2 pounds I'll never see again.
Yeah, good.
So, yeah.
And what are the biggest habits that needed to be broken, specifically from your eating? So that what has changed in your current household?
Two things. The first thing is, I actually, and I know people will think that this is a lie because you'll look at me and think clearly you had to eat, but number one, I didn't eat enough. I would not eat breakfast. I would eat lunch and then maybe eat dinner. Now, granted, I would have a normal size meal at that setting, which normal size in America world is huge, you know. I mean, I think that's the problem that we all have is our portions. So I, at the time, was thinking, well, I'm doing good. I'm eating a normal-sized portion, when in all reality, it was an oversized portion, and I wasn't eating frequently enough. So that's the main thing, is I've started eating breakfast, trying to eat every 3 hours, you know, and trying to just look at the portion of what I'm eating, and I get full so easy because I'm going to eat again in 3 hours, and I'm going to eat enough, and it's going to fill me up, and then, you know, I eat again in 3 more hours.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the main thing, is eating more frequently and eating whole healthy foods, not, you know, greasy, fried stuff that actually doesn't give you any nutritional value whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's really great. And I know Philip shared last week that there were some other very subtle things, like swapping out mustard for something else. And
like mayonnaise. Instead of mayonnaise, eat mustard, and sauces instead of your heavy-calorie dressings on your salad, and just watching your calorie count, that people don't have any idea like that what they're actually consuming. But Lolo's made all these,
food.
And drinks, absolutely. Most people get about 750 calories a day from sugary drinks or drinks that, you know, are not good for it. We converted everybody over to water and, you know, and some coffee and unsweetened tea. That's what we do. So
And what about the amount of carbohydrates that are consumed? Because I know a lot of us think that carbohydrates are the enemy, and there have been so many diets of late that, you know, actually strip carbs out of the diet. What's your perspective on that, Phil?
I would say that if you strip fat out of your diet, that's not healthy. If you strip carbohydrates out of your diet, that's not healthy, because you need them all. You know, you need good, healthy cholesterol from the good, healthy fats. So if you just go back to eating, you know, the proper portion size, eating many, you know, eating 4, 5, 6 times a day, smaller meals, more consistently, and then also eating, you know, good, healthy carbohydrates, good, healthy proteins, and good, healthy fats, you know, later we'll have that on our web. Yeah, it's a balanced meal, but that really, yeah. Yeah, when you start pulling one thing out, your body has to overcompensate it in another area, and that's why disease starts happening and people get sick, because they're not balanced. And that's the simple.
Yeah, and I mean, we always try to, like for example, I always try to have a carb and a protein together because it keeps your blood sugar balanced, and you don't have those cravings, and you don't have those spikes in your energy and those drops in your energy. It just keeps you stable because, I mean, we need every minute of the day, you know. I mean, we've got so many things going on that we need energy all day. There's no time for a lack of energy, and I think that's true for many Americans, that there's just so many things going on in our lives, and we're so busy that we need all of our energy. So I can't risk it by doing some kind of fad diet that may, you know, cause me to, you know, lose energy.
Now, those are short-term. Those are all short-term, and that is what you just said, Amy. It's a diet. And we're not teaching people diet. We're teaching people, you know, body heal thyself, because you're feeding it the proper macronutrients and the proper things that it needs to survive and to live. And your body will reward you for it by getting rid of the excess fat around itself. A lot of the fat that's around our bellies is actually the body's protection, keeping it, you know, keeping our organs protected from the toxins and the other things that, you know, your body has a way of protecting itself. And if you're teaching it that the only time I'm going to get food is 4 o'clock in the afternoon, it's going to start storing food. It's going to store that as fat so you can live longer and protect it. So
right.
That's the reason why we're teaching people, you know, every 2 to 3 hours, eat something, and then eat something healthy. And then your body relaxes and says, hey, I know I'm going to get food. I know we keep saying it, and it sounds so simple, but it really is at the end of the day. If you eat, you know, like what Amy was saying, she eats her oatmeal in the morning, you know, good, healthy oatmeal, and then she'll have a couple of eggs, or, you know, Amy will have an egg and 2 or 3 egg whites. So that's your carb, and that's your protein. And, you know, we'll eat their almonds, which is a good, healthy fat, and we'll cook our chicken with olive oil, which is a good, healthy fat.
Right.
And so that's how you, and then you eat your salad and you eat your vegetables, which give you your carbohydrates, and your brown rice. Those are all really good, healthy foods that feed your body, and they all have a purpose. And if you start picking and choosing and stripping them out to give yourself a quick, you know, you're pulling out, you know, carbohydrates are they're water.
Mm-hmm.
They hold more water into your body, and they're, you know, they're water-loving macronutrients. That's what I'm looking for. But if you just do things, you're just looking for short-term fixes. We're not telling people that's going to make them healthy. We want to bring your whole body back into balance, where your body will get to its good, healthy weight, and you can you can live. So that's basically what we're teaching people, and that's what Lolo says. Hey, I feel healthy. You know, I feel healthy. I feel good.
Right.
And your body's
right.
Just getting rid of that extra weight that it doesn't need, and you're getting down to where the weight that you don't have to be a supermodel. You know, maybe they're not even healthy. You want
right.
to be healthy. That's what we're trying to get people to be healthy.
Well, I need to take just a real quick break here, Phil. Just speaking of being healthy and getting to a place where you feel good about yourself, I do want to remind folks about our sponsor for the Real Life Renovation Show, which is the Barbados Tourism Authority. And their current promotion that they have going on is called the Best of Barbados. And you can come and discover the best that Barbados has to offer with their special Best of Barbados promotion. You can save up to $300 on airfare and get your first night free when booking a 7-night minimum at participating hotels. They have a 5-night minimum at the all-inclusive resorts, which include your food and entertainment. So you can start your day off in paradise with a free daily breakfast, and that's, of course, after you've taken your walk or workout, and then explore the Best of Barbados with their buy one, get second half price admission to participating local attractions. And they also have a special dining card and an island promotion with a number of different dinner vouchers. So you can book by May 1st, visit your local travel agent or their website at visitbarbados.org for further details. And Phil and Amy, we do have a couple of call-ins, so I'm going to take the first one of them on the air, and they are all from your local area code there, 864. So I'm going to take the first one live. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you doing? Who do I have here?
You have Matt from Greenville.
Hey, Matt. Well, I am going to let you tell your story. And Phil and Amy, do you have any background for me on Matt?
No, I'm not sure.
All right, Matt.
I'll let Matt give you the background story.
I
have a background story, but they don't have it. So.
Okay, well, tell us all about it.
Well, pretty much what it was is I just have to call in and just say that Phil and Amy are such a huge, huge inspiration to me. I had previously gone through a huge weight loss in my life and kind of was just back in a rut and very lackluster. And some of my friends had told me about this on Amy Fitness Challenge, and I'd seen them on The Biggest Loser. And so a bunch of us joined, and the support that I've received from that, I mean, it really has changed my life. It's so awesome. And I have a question for them, if I may ask.
Absolutely. Okay.
We are all, me and my friends and I are doing so well with everything. We're so excited, but we want to know, what can we do after the fitness challenge and everything's over? Are you going to continue to, like, set up something? Because, like, they're so good, I would like to join a membership with them or something.
Well, that is actually in the works, Matt. We are actually taking our website to more of a social networking-type website. We're going to have a probably a monthly newsletter that you can actually, like an online club that you can actually join, that will be even more in-depth than our daily emails. Plus, we have in the works the next 90 days, which will deal more with, like, the mental aspects of weight loss and things like that. So, yeah, keep watching philandamyfitness.com for a lot of new exciting things coming up. So that's
and
a great
question.
And
also on this show, we're going to be doing this every week, and we're going to be starting another challenge here in a couple of weeks. And, you know, we're going to take this all the way through, as Amy said, not only the weight loss part, but the fitness and the mental side of things as well.
Awesome.
Great.
Cool.
All right, thanks for calling, Matt. That's a good story.
Well, thank you guys so much. I just can't say enough good things. You guys are great. Thank you so much.
Well,
thanks.
Thank
you.
We've got two more, so let me get them on the air. Good morning, 864-235 is the prefix on the caller I've got on.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Go ahead and introduce yourself. Do you have a question for Phil and Amy?
Well, this is
Allison,
Allison. Amy's sister,
hey, Allison.
Actually.
Oh.
Hello.
Oh, hey, Allison.
I didn't even know you guys were doing this. This is great. Okay, so my question is actually from a coworker here who wanted to know if there is a better time of the day to work out. Is it true if you work out first thing in the morning, that's going to get your metabolism going for the day, or does it really matter just as long as you get in your workout?
I actually think that it's sometimes, I mean, if you start doing anything every day the same time, that your body gets used to used to that. So you always want to change things up to kind of shock your body. I mean, it's not, if there's a certain time of day is the only time of day you can work out, absolutely do that, work out, But if it's possible, like, to work out in the morning a couple days a week, then work out at night a couple days a week, you know, and just kind of mix it up, then your body doesn't get used to any one thing. Because your body, we keep saying that, but your body's really, really smart, and it can adapt to whatever, you know, you're doing. And you always also want to mix up your workouts. Like, you don't want to do the same thing every single day. Number one, because you'll get completely bored and you'll be, like, wanting to quit. Another thing is different exercises put impact on different joints. And you don't want to do anything that's going to, you know, hurt your knees. Like, say, for example, if you're always running, you have a danger of injuring your knees. You know, so you might want to do the elliptical for a little bit and then do, you know, the running, swim sometimes. So you always want to be changing your exercises so you won't be bored. And then also because that keeps your body guessing again as well.
Okay, well,
thanks
a
lot.
We've got two other callers. So, Allison, thank you so much. And
thanks.
I'm going to take one from area code 605. Area code 605, you're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hey.
Hello. Hi, guys.
Did you
Hi,
have a question for Phil and Amy?
Yeah, this is Josh from South Dakota. And
Josh.
I guess my question is, when are you guys going to bring the challenge out here?
We would love to. We want to go to every single state. We would love to bring it there. We actually send me your email, Josh, at Amy at Phil and Amy Fitness, and I can send you a package on how to get a business to sponsor us to come out there because we would love to do that. I've never been to South Dakota. I was actually born in North Dakota, believe
oh, wow.
it or not. My dad was in the Air Force, and so I was born there, but I have never been to South Dakota, so I want to come and see Mount Rushmore.
Well, I'm on the other side of the state.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wow.
Well, we can do both.
How did you hear about the radio show here, Josh?
Well, you know, I'm big on Facebook, and you guys have a far-reaching effect through Facebook. I think the social networking sites have really, you know, widened
yes.
the support systems that are out there.
Well,
yeah,
great.
That's
well,
right.
Josh, we
awesome.
Have time just for one more question. I've got one more caller before we move on to our next show. Thanks for calling in. And
hey,
remember
guys.
That we're going to be
appreciate
doing
that,
a challenge on the radio beginning in a couple of weeks. So keep your eyes on Solutions Live for the Real Life Renovation Show at 10 o'clock every Thursday morning.
Thank you.
Thanks, Josh.
Okay, one more from area code 864. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello,
hey, guys.
Hey, you've got Chickie Fitzgerald and you got Amy and Phil.
Good morning. This is Brett calling from Greenville. Good friends with Amy and Phil.
Hey, Brett.
Hey, Brett.
Hey, you guys are both inspirational to me, but my question for you is, for some of us who need to work out in the morning and in the afternoon, what are your recommendations for as far as a routine goes? Should it be all anaerobic in the morning, anaerobic afternoon, or should it be, you know, muscle morning, muscle afternoon, or some kind of anaerobic workout, you know, mix? So that's the question I have for you.
I'm going to let Philip answer that one because that's
okay.
his technical specialty.
Yeah, and Phil, we just have about 2 minutes remaining, so just keep
okay.
that in mind.
Well, I know that what Brett mentioned was that anaerobic style workout. I work out that way. What that basically is I always tell people there's different ways to do it. We found that we burned a lot of calories doing like interval type workouts, which, you know, people just need to go online and study and see different things. But I think we need to do the aerobic style, which is running, walking. I think that's the first thing for people is just to get your, to get out there and get some exercise. Statistics are that, you know, there's only about 25% of America that actually gets 30 minutes a day of any kind of exercise at all, and that could just be walking around your block. So you need to kind of know where you're at and start where you're at by doing something. And then once you start getting a little bit of fitness under your belt, you can start to change your type of workout. What we do is that anaerobic style, and I do it for the reason of you'll find fat runners, you'll find fat cyclists, you'll find people who walk who struggle with weight, but you won't find any fat sprinters. So it's a physical impossibility.
And, you know, I was concerned about keeping my weight loss and also, you know, moving up in my fitness level. So I've kind of adapted that whole principle of 1 hour of intense workout a day where I integrate some weight training, which gets your heart rate up. It also helps you build lean muscle. And I also integrate running, walking, and trying to keep my heart rate up for that entire hour. It goes up and it comes down. One way people can do that is using a treadmill, going up for 20 seconds, going as fast as you can, jumping off, slowing it down, walking, running. You'll see, you'll watch them on The Biggest Loser. What they'll do is Bob will have, I don't know if you watch that, Bob will have them running, and then they say jump. They jump off the treadmill. What that's doing is that's raising your heart rate up, that's bringing it back down, that's raising it up, bringing it back down, and what you're actually doing is you're developing, you're burning calories, you're burning more calories than you would do in a normal just walking or doing some kind of other aerobic style workout. It's just a different style of workout where it's actually like an interval training style.
Right,
and that's
right.
What we've found that burns the most calories and gives us the most efficiency, because I think everybody's short on time. So if you can find out the way to work out the hardest at your hardest level, it's all about intensity, we found out on The Biggest Loser. So Amy and I just figured out a way to do that.
Speaking of being short of time, Phil, I don't want to have to cut you off. This has been a great dialogue. I've got to switch to our next show. Thank you guys so much. And it sounds like next week we need to talk about exercise. Thanks to all of you
absolutely.
Who called in. And we are now going to shift gears. Sorry to those of you who I didn't get to, but we're going to move on. Thanks, guys, and I'll talk to you next week.
Hey, have a good week. Thanks, Tiki.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now.
Okay, I'm going to get my co-host, Chris Bradshaw, on the phone. Chris, you're on the air.
Yes, I am. Thank you. And that what a wonderful guest they had, and what great questions to hear from the callers.
Absolutely. Well, we are going to move right into our next segment because we're getting just a little bit of a late start, but we have an amazing show today. We are going to be talking about Kids for Humanity, which is actually a new book that I am going to be putting together because I got so many amazing stories about kid and teen philanthropy. And joining us this morning, we have got a group of students from a school in Dearborn, Michigan, Fordson High School, and this particular group of teens is very, very active. In fact, the leadership of the National Honor Society. And I'm going to just go with first names, guys. You'll have to bear with me. We've got Ali, who is the president of the National Honor Society Club, Jalal, who is the vice president, and then one of their members, Manta. And Manta, did I pronounce that right?
No, it's Manta.
Manta. Okay.
Manta.
Manta. Okay, great. Well, I didn't practice that enough yesterday, but welcome to our show. And why don't we just jump right in and have you guys tell the story of what it is that you accomplished, and then we'll kind of step back and hear the history of what brought you to that.
Okay.
Ali, do you want to jump in?
Hi, how are you? The thing is, what we accomplished something that was not expected, and something that our community didn't think we could do.
Okay.
From the beginning, we didn't have much support. Like, people viewed us as children, as still as students, with just games in mind. Just like, go sell your candy bars and raise maybe $200 or $300.
Right, because they were used to fundraising efforts of that magnitude of, again, the wrapping paper and the candy bars and that type of thing. But what were you guys, what did you set out to do?
We set out to make a difference. We set out not only to raise money, but to build awareness of the humanitarian crisis in Gaza.
Well, that's quite a big challenge for teenagers. And you happen to live in a very unusual community, which, as I understand it, Dearborn is the largest Middle Eastern community outside of the Middle East. And prior to yesterday, I didn't know that. So you have a very large Middle Eastern population in your school. In fact, I believe the principal of the school, is of Middle Eastern descent, and the group that we have here on the phone is that. So you do have a passion for what's going on in Gaza. Is that what brought Gaza to the forefront and made that the focus of your fundraising efforts?
Hi, Chiki. It's Jalal Mughani. Good morning. First of all, I'd just like to say it's an honor and a privilege to be on your show. I really wanted to thank you on behalf of the National Honor Society.
You guys have just been great. So thank you for thanking us.
In regards to that question regarding the issue of being of Middle Eastern descent, we would say that's not the issue. Being of Middle Eastern descent is not what drove us to try to help the people in need in Gaza.
Mm-hmm.
We did not look at them and say, these are our Palestinian brothers and sisters in need that are being bombed, that are being hurt, that are being injured, that are being killed, that are being murdered.
Right.
They are not our Palestinian brothers and sisters. They are our brothers and sisters in humanity.
Absolutely.
That we look at them and we see that if they were Palestinian or Israeli or any other descent, that we would say we want to help them because they're being oppressed and they're not being helped, they're not being aided. So as we would watch the news, we would look on the television, look on the tube, and see so many people being murdered and injured, and many people, over 5,000 Gazan citizens, civilians, needing medical attention that were severely injured from the attacks, we thought to ourselves, why are we going to sit here idly when we could do something?
Right.
And we don't think that our potential is simply reserved at raising money from selling candy bars. Our potential is at a much higher caliber. Being at a young age does not mean that we cannot do so much more.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
We said that we had to initiate this campaign. It's not only something that we should do, but something that is mandatory upon us. Because if there is an injustice taking place anywhere in this world, it's a threat to justice everywhere. And as people advocating the four pillars of the National Honor Society, being leadership, scholarship, service, and character, we thought that we have to stand to the occasion and be true leaders in the sense of that meaning of leadership. That we can't just say, you know what, yeah, we advocate leadership, but we actually have to do it. We can't be hypocrites in that aspect.
Mm-hmm.
So we found it extremely important to initiate this campaign, and we suggested it to the members of the National Honor Society, and the members here at Fortson is an outstanding number. More than 100 members are part of the National Honor Society.
Wow.
And they were all very interested, and we all told them this is going to be a humanitarian campaign. They all agreed, and it was a great success because we had so much support from the students, especially.
Mm-hmm. And as I understand it, you guys arranged a fundraising event, which was a dinner called the Children of Gaza.
Mm-hmm.
And tell us a little bit about the amount of money that you set out to raise, what you raised as a part of the dinner itself, and then what your ultimate dollar amount was that you were able to raise.
Hi, Chicky. This is Montaha. When we first started, we had a goal of $25,000, and at the end of the dinner, we ended up with $43,000, and that was from donors, businesses, and many people that supported us from the community.
Well, that is an amazing accomplishment. But as I believe that Ali started out saying, you didn't have all support at the beginning. You ran into a lot of doors that were closed in your face. What kept you guys going?
Well, at first, some people didn't take us seriously, but when some people perceived us as not serious, that just made us work harder and to prove to them that we were serious. Basically, we were all very passionate about the cause, and we all worked really hard, and every door that was slammed in our faces was just another opportunity to prove to them that we really cared about the cause, and we really wanted to make the to use all of our efforts to help the children of Gaza.
Chris, did you want to jump in? I'm hogging all of the questions.
Well, that's okay. I think you've been doing a great job, and I just want to say that I've loved, really enjoyed hearing each of you and having you step up. And I enjoyed, Dalil, your comment about it being humanity and just watching this area of the world, and that it wasn't necessarily due to any personal connections. But do any of you have personal connections with that area of the world, and how close are they?
I have no connections to Gaza. I'm Lebanese. I am American first. I was born in America. I've been to Lebanon only twice and for probably 2 months. So we've been raised in this country, and we have the values and the attitude of the American generation and the American people. We are all American first.
Got it.
And does anybody else have a comment about that?
Well, no. From my perspective, I would say I'm also Lebanese. I was born and raised in America, and I'm an American citizen. I watch American news. I watch the same news that everyone else watches, and those are the things I was seeing. And to see the International Red Cross complaining about so many civilians being attacked and so many ambulances and hospitals being bombed, that's something that's quite disturbing. And we can't just sit on the sideline and just look at that and see, oh, well, okay, that's going on in the other hemisphere of this world, so we shouldn't do anything about it. We're here in America. No, we have to have a sense of urgency to help our brothers and sisters in humanity. Because if we're not brothers and sisters in faith or in culture, we're equals and brothers and sisters in humanity. I would say that personally, as a Muslim, being a Muslim, that's a fundamental principle that we have. The principle of equality and helping one another and having that sense of brotherhood in humanity.
Okay, great. I would like to hear a little bit about your selection of the International Medical Corps as the group that you were going to use to actually ensure that the money that you raised actually got to Gaza and to really help as a part of the actual aid efforts rather than going to fund, the administration of whatever organization you selected. How was that process done?
My name is Amira Kasem, and I am the NHS sponsor. I would have a good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning to all your listeners. We are very, very gratified that someone did pay attention, or some people paid attention to these young students' efforts. As many times, I have to admit, they go unnoticed, except for, of course, the rewards that you get from having done such acts of kindness. And I know that we have, when I was one of the adults that stood in their way, I'll admit it, because in the beginning, I was dubious. First of all, we have our National Honor Society goal. And second of all, oftentimes, especially being the minority that we are in this part of the world, we often, and I have been prone to that, we often find ourselves defending a lot of our choices that would go unchecked in any part of the United States in this region, sometimes are checked once and twice and three times.
Right, and
so,
excuse me, can I just stop you for just a second? Are you on a speakerphone? Because we're getting a lot of feedback from, we're hearing an echo on you. Are you on a speakerphone?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, could you just pick up the
phone? You know what, I'll use another phone.
Okay.
Hello? Is this better?
Yes, that's much better. Thanks.
Okay.
I'm sorry, what you were saying was so important, I didn't want to miss capturing that on the recording.
Okay. Well, I didn't realize that. Thank you. But this is what the fact that, and this is back to, I think, your goal also, the students and young people are so full of potential and so full of ideas. And I do want to mention, and I want to emphasize, that this was purely their project. We just stood on the sidelines as adults, and I as their sponsor, and watched them without becoming an obstacle in their way. And I think that is probably one of the most important part of the adult's role in such projects, that we do not impede. We do not stand and tell them they cannot do something, but rather watch them do it and help them maybe if they do run into obstacles, resolve them. About the International Medical Corps, we wanted, first of all, an organization that was non-political, with no affiliations or ties to any political group, and because our act was purely humanitarian. And so we started researching, and the International Medical Corps came up as an organization that had first access to a lot of the troubled regions in the world. And secondly, the type of service they provide has always been quite admirable, especially in terms of psychological support, not just medical. They've counseled rape victims all over the Sudan region at one time, and we were very impressed by the type of work they did. Third, and as important perhaps, is the founder of that organization was a Fortson student, and we thought that that would be a very good motive, a very good drive for NHS students, as they are a leadership group as well.
Absolutely, yes, and that was a very, very interesting connection. And as I've looked at in the last couple of days at the work that they've done, they really are an incredible organization. So I think you did choose very, very well. So tell us about the turnout at the actual event.
Okay, I think I'm going to let one of them do that.
Okay, great.
So, Jalal, you want to talk about the turnout?
Yeah, sure. The turnout of the event, we had more than 750 people attending the event, and the hall was completely full. We actually had the NHS, we had about two tables set for the members themselves, and we actually had to get up and have other guests come in and sit on those seats. And we had about 50 NHS members volunteering, making sure everything was going swell and everything like that. And the majority of them were standing. They didn't even eat dinner. But they all knew that it was for the cause, and they just wanted everyone else that was coming to be comfortable. And it was a very successful event. Many people were very driven by the speeches that were made, some of the video presentations that we had presented, the presentation especially by the IMC, which I personally would say that I was motivated by to see how much they actually help in so many different troubled places in the world.
Well, that sounds like a wonderful problem to have when you have so many people interested in helping you that you are scrambling for seats and you guys had to stand for your own selves. And it is a wonderful story about finding that you weren't the first Fordham graduates or Fordham potential soon-to-be graduates who had decided to take this path and become part of the nonprofit and charitable world. That must have been really a treat to find that connection.
So that begs the question, for each of you that were deeply involved in this, and certainly from your colleagues that helped you pull this off, is what's next for you guys? Is there another effort that you are working toward? Are you just kind of enjoying the success of this one and watching it unfold? What's next?
Well, I'm sorry, we never really enjoyed the success of this. The only success we'll see is when we know all the relief was given to all the children of Gaza, and we know that there's always going to be relief given to all the people of the world and all the children. We never stopped working. Currently, right now, I'm focusing on working with youth dialogue programs because I believe that's the most important thing right now. Even though the older generations may be stubborn-minded or stuck, I've noticed that the youth and the people of today are changing. They're opening their hearts for each other. And I've been going to many retreats and meeting up with students of different backgrounds and ethnicities. And I'm finding we have a lot in common. And we're working to break the barriers that have separated us with many wars and many conflicts in the world.
That's a really good point, and I see the same thing in kids even as young as grade school. We talked about this a little bit yesterday, that the whole reason I formed Kids for Humanity and that I want to put all of these stories into print for people to really recognize what is being done, not only by teens, but by grade school and middle school children, is that there are efforts going on all over this country, really to carry out the same kind of vision that you guys have. And again, I really applaud you for your efforts. How about the rest of you? Do you have other personal interests in getting involved in charity on a lifelong basis?
Yeah, I would say that personally, I mentioned earlier that the IMC is something that I'm extremely interested in, and I was very motivated by, and I intend on going to medicine after high school, and I was thinking that why not go into, maybe in the future, go into an organization like this that's able to help so many people around the world. But just another point that I wanted to make, Chiki, was that we intended by this dinner that we did early a few months ago was being the first annual fundraising dinner, that we're going to continue, that the students and NHS are going to continue this fundraiser every single year. It's an annual fundraiser, and this was the first initiation for that. And it's primarily for the children of Gaza, because they are in so much need, and they are still being under siege, and there is so much need and medical aid, especially to that area of the world. It is the most concentrated area in the world. More than 1 million people live in that small region, which is probably smaller than the size of the city of Dearborn itself.
Right.
So there is so much aid needed for that area. So this is going to be a continued effort, especially by the members and the juniors that we prepared for to continue this humanitarian campaign. And if we find that there is another place in the world that is in dire need of medical attention or of any type of aid that we can be of help in, we will try our efforts and help them as well.
Right. Now, are you guys all seniors?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So hopefully you've been mentoring some of the other kids in the National Honor Society to step into your shoes.
Hi, Chiki. This is Norma. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Norma. I'm doing
great. Good morning.
Great.
And for that question, it's a valid one. One of the things that we've done is, since we talked yesterday, you know that we believe that five-year-olds in kindergarten have a lot to offer.
You bet
they do. And their heroes are the NHS students, the ones that they want to be like. So what we've done is in the past few years have had the NHS students come into the elementary and do fundraising events. And one of them was for Bosnia. When there was the genocide, we were concerned about that and the psychological warfare. So the NHS students came in with the fourth grade class, put on movie night, and we raised almost $1,000. That $1,000 went to the camps, the refugee camps, so that children could be children and they could play with balls, bats, and equipment. And it went to several camps. And one of the things that we wanted the NHS students to do is to show that children, no matter what age, can make a difference. So, yes, we did keep the elementary kids in mind.
Well, that's great. And, you know, I think I shared with you guys yesterday, that's actually the tagline for Kids for Humanity, that helping hands do come in all sizes and, you know, all shapes and all colors as well. And I really applaud that effort, because I think if you can get those young kids, you know, not only thinking about other people, but I love that you've said that they actually really hold these National Honor Society kids in high regard, which, by the way, they should. I mean, that's a really awesome accomplishment. In the 5 or 6 minutes that we have left, you know, I'd love to hear from the others about what your aspirations are after graduation, and you know, how you intend to stay involved both in the community and you know, what you plan on doing in the future.
Well, first I would like to add that the National Honor Society at Fortson, we've had many previous projects, including the dinner, and we're currently preparing for other projects that are helping our community, like We Live for Life, which is a 24-hour event where we raise money for cancer awareness and cancer research. And, of course, after I graduate, I plan on continuing my efforts, and if I could help NHS in any way possible whenever I have time, I will be more willing, very happy to do so. And I would love to carry on everything I've learned through NHS while preparing for the dinner and all the qualities I gained with me to my new community, which will be in a college campus, and I'll participate in several activities, whatever is available, any fundraisers, and future events.
Hi, Chiki. I'd like to add on to that.
just want to let you guys know, you guys are the first, this is the first interview we've had, or the first anything we've done in public, actually, after our dinner. Nobody's interviewed us, nobody's talked to us about our dinner.
Well, hopefully it won't be the last.
But that's not what we're aiming for. After high school, I plan on going to the University of Michigan. I really, really like youth dialogue.
Uh-huh.
And I did a program with PBS and University of Michigan, actually, a month ago with another student through the University of Michigan. And I've talked to the president of the Arab student. I've talked to the student of the ASA, the Arab Student Association over there, and I hope I'm working with them to continue youth dialogue and to get to know other people and other ethnicities.
Very interesting.
And I would say on my part that I'm intending on going to Wayne State University, and they have an extremely diverse student body over there, and they have many different clubs and organizations. And I would agree with Ali when he's talking about the youth dialogue, because if we plan on getting anywhere in this world, we would say that dialogue is the most important thing, that we need to talk to each other. And even though we have differences, we have so many similarities.
Right.
And especially that when we find a certain place in the world or a certain group of people in the world that are really in need of any type of aid or attention, we should gather our efforts and put aside our differences and come together under the banner of humanity, under the banner of morality, under the banner of unity in humanity, and come together and help those people that are in need, because we have the resources. We are the strongest, most prosperous country in the world, and we have so many different opportunities and resources to help the people abroad that are less fortunate. So I think that putting aside all these differences that we have and actually appreciating the diversity that we're in, we can help all those people in need.
Well, that's terrific, and I know you guys aren't doing this for the accolades and the praise, but just speaking on behalf of Chris and myself, you know, I just want to tell you guys how proud we are of you for, you know, stepping out and, you know, having some doors closed in your face and having people say that you couldn't get it done. It takes the kind of courage and perseverance that you guys have shown, and also, you know, the other balanced side of this, which is the academic side of what you have accomplished in even being in the National Honor Society to begin with, but also to step up and be leaders in that organization and see that done. And, you know, our next guest is Chris, who's going to be talking about the International Medical Corps and what they were able to accomplish and the difference that the money that you raised really made in that organization. And I know, you know, he would be proud to hear that, you know, at least one of you are interested in becoming a doctor and looking at what you can do as a part of that organization. And, you know, the rest of you, the kind of activity that you have talked about and getting involved with youth dialogue, you know, it's just really amazing to hear those stories from teens. And so I'm really hoping you guys will be willing to participate in documenting this in the Kids for Humanity book that I'm going to be publishing later this summer, and so that we can get this story told to a lot of people and get a lot of kids excited about helping humanity.
And Chickie, if I may, the other thing that the students acknowledge was a lot of times for publicity, it's on media, actors, athletes, not really about humanitarian efforts.
Right.
And we just want to say thank you so much for continuing to bring that issue to everyone abroad. Thank you for doing that. It's real important.
Well, it has been a real pleasure to have all of you on, and hopefully you can share this broadcast with the rest of your student body and with some of your community, and we can get the word out even further. And again, you know, my goal is to inspire parents that their kids actually can make a difference, and to encourage them instead of to just assume that teenagers are going to get in trouble or are going to be difficult to get along with, just because of being teens, and that there are kids in this world that are just making an amazing difference. And, again, I just thank you guys all for taking time off class. Norma, thank the administration of Fordson for letting them, take the time for this interview.
Thank you very much. On behalf of the National Honor Society, I'd like to thank you very much for the time you've given us and for the publicity you've given for the children of Gaza, and not for us, and for the children of the world.
Okay, guys. Well, you have a super day, and just keep up the good work.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Well, Chris, wasn't that amazing?
Oh, I love them.
What do you guys think?
Yeah, hang on. We need to let me get them off the air. Sometimes it works better than others. And here, let me just...
Nikki, you just find some amazing people sometimes, or they find you, which I know...
Well, this one found me, but I'll tell you what, the next one, I see he is actually on the phone, so we are going to be talking to someone in Jordan this morning.
Oh, my God.
And, yeah, so let me just see if we've got Chris on the phone. Hang on one second. Good morning, Chris. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for
having
me.
It's good afternoon for you, right?
It's 6 p.m. here.
Okay, great. And you are, tell us where you are and tell us who you are, and then we'll dig into the other side of this story.
Great. Well, again, thank you for having me on the show. My name is Chris Skopek. I'm the country director for International Medical Corps program in Jordan, and I am currently calling from the capital of Jordan, Amman.
Okay. Well, I have actually been to Amman, Jordan, and it is just a beautiful city, and I was there actually quite a long time ago. I think it was 1988.
I'm sure it's changed quite a bit since then, but it's still very beautiful and very welcoming.
Yes, it actually was. It was my first experience in the Middle East, and very, very positive at that. Now, Chris, I know you have had a lot of international experience. I saw that you had been in Georgia. Have you done other assignments with the IMC? I was having just a little bit of trouble getting a hold of your bio, but why don't you just give us your background? That might be the easiest.
Certainly. I started working with IMC back in 2004 when I was working in the North Caucasus, and we were running programs, mostly primary health care programs, addressing the needs of refugees, internally displaced persons from Chechnya related to the conflict in the North Caucasus. I have since traveled quite a bit with IMC through East Africa, as well as the Middle East programs. We have programs in the Middle East in Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, as well as Jordan, now as well in the occupied Palestinian territories. More recently, I have done emergency response in Pakistan after the earthquake in 2006, as well as in Georgia during this last summer's war with Russia. I've certainly had a lot of opportunities to travel and work and try to provide some assistance in the places that I've been.
Mm-hmm. And Chris, what was your educational background? What took you into serving humanity, as it were?
I got my undergraduate degree in anthropology, and in the course of that, I spent a year studying abroad in Ghana, West Africa. And that really sparked my interest in traveling, and not just traveling, but also living abroad, and really getting the opportunity to learn and understand the people with whom I was living. But it also gave me this sense of need to provide or to give back, and not just to be in a position of taking. Because when you do travel, you take so much from the people and the countries that you live in. My goal and my interest was to give back, but I didn't know exactly how I was going to do that. So after I graduated, I ended up joining the Peace Corps, and I spent 2 years in Kazakhstan. And returning from Peace Corps, I went back to school, and I went to Georgetown University and got a degree in international relations. And after graduating there, I was fortunate to get a job in the international humanitarian response field, and my first assignment was in the North Caucasus with the, my emphasis on Russian and former Soviet republics. So it was a nice fit for me, and it opened the door to in a an industry that I just became very passionate about.
And so as you were growing up, what did you want to be?
I think the first thing I wanted to be when I was a kid was an archaeologist. And don't ask me where I went from archaeology to anthropology, but I don't think it's a huge leap.
No.
But again, I think I'm still asking myself that question, what I want to be when I grow up.
Well, Chris, I have a co-host on this show. Her name is Chris Bradshaw, and she is calling in from Dallas, Texas. I'm in Tampa, Florida, so I'm going to let Chris ask a couple of questions because I know she's got some burning.
Oh, that's all right. Chicky, you've had some background, and I know this is actually where Chicky's one of Chicky's passions lies, is all of this, the helping, the giving, and especially with children. So I'd like to hear more about the story itself and Fordham and things like that.
I'm sorry, Chicky, can you repeat that? I'm having a little bit of trouble hearing Chris on the other end.
Okay, no worries. Chris was just, she was wanting me to make the connection back to our previous interview, which was the students at Fordson High School in Dearborn, Michigan, who held the dinner called The Children of Gaza, and how they raised the $43,000 that ended up being contributed to the International Medical Corps. And Dr. Robert Simon, you know, who is the head of the IMC, is a graduate of Fordson High School. So we had just interviewed the head of the National Honor Society and the VP of the National Honor Society and then one of their members and a couple of the administrators at the school and heard the story of the money that they raised and how they wanted to see that relief effort, you know, put into capable hands in Gaza to make sure that the children actually got medical care. So I think Chris was just asking you to make that connection back with your role both in Jordan and in the region, how you ended up ensuring that that money got where it was supposed to go and what was done with it.
Right, right. Well, I mean, it was really critical to our response in Gaza, the funding that we received. And without it, we wouldn't have been able to do what we did. And I can get in, I'll explain a little more detail about that, but preface it by pointing out that we have IMC in the Middle East has extensive programs in Iraq, as well as in Jordan, Syria, and Lebanon. But prior to this recent conflict, our support to Gaza was only through the donation of medicines and medical supplies. We didn't actually have an office. We didn't have a team or operations on the ground. So when this conflict broke out at the end of December, we realized that we had a tremendous amount of regional resources to contribute in the way of personnel, in the way of supplies, as well as in our just our institutional experience in emergency response. We as a organization have responded to emergencies around the world for over 25 years, and it's a critical component of who we are and what we do. So we needed to try to find, identify how we could contribute to the plight of the people of Gaza in this time of crisis, and but resources were really critical. What could we do? How could, because everything that we want to do, of course, cost money that we didn't have at the moment. And in a time of emergency, there's really, there's very little, you don't have the luxury of waiting and raising funds over a period of time and waiting till you have collected a certain level before you can actually go in and intervene. The needs are immediate and they're on the ground. So the fact that the students at the school were able to raise this money in such a short period of time was just absolutely essential for us to be able to respond as quickly as we did. And so what we were able to do was to send in medical teams from Jordan, in fact, and we actually flew them into Cairo, where they traveled by land to the border with Gaza. And after a couple days' wait, because there was real difficulty accessing Gaza even after the ceasefire, they were finally able to get across the border. And it took a lot of effort on our part. We had to get strong support from the Minister of Foreign Affairs in Jordan, who liaised with his counterpart in Egypt to assure access for us. And it was really a huge accomplishment. And so we got five medical teams in, which consisted of a general practitioner, a primary healthcare doctor, that is, and a nurse. And the doctors had all been extensively trained by IMC in mental health. So in addition to being able to provide basic primary healthcare as well as minor surgical assistance, they were also had the capacity to really identify and support people with emotional or mental health or psychosocial issues. And in fact, so many of the patients presenting to them had such issues. It's really one of the most urgent issues facing the people of Gaza, and continues to this day.
Right, and actually it's interesting because Crystal from the office in Santa Monica had mentioned that to me yesterday. And you know, if you just think about the whole issue of not having employment, and many of these people also not having homes, the mental impact of that on your psyche, you know, as well as just the physical pressures that puts on you is significant. And certainly with also the threat and fear of war and your personal safety, I would think that does exasperate that.
Right, and what you have to remember is this is a population that has been, among other things, through 2 years of very strict sanctions and very restricted lifestyle under the constant threat of security. So they're already under a tremendous amount of stress even prior to the outbreak of this war. And when you consider that the population of Gaza is almost 1.5 million, 75% of whom are actually registered refugees, and this is a territory the size of, you know, maybe Washington, D.C. or something of that sort. So
wow.
What we were looking at was a situation where really nobody within Gaza was unaffected by this conflict. And access to Gaza was extremely limited. So while there was a lot of interest from international organizations and individuals wanting to go in and help, a very small percentage were actually able to get in there. And so when you need, there's so many people that require assistance, and if we talk specifically in terms of psychosocial or psychiatric assistance for people, who is there to provide it? Because there's nobody that has been through this conflict that is
right.
That are themselves unaffected. And so what we realized the need to do was is provide some immediate relief to the people that are out there providing services, which means doctors and nurses, emergency responders. And you can go down the list with teachers and social workers and on and on.
Tell me a little bit about how you get your resources. Do the doctors and volunteers that come, do they receive any compensation, or is this something where they're just donating their own time under the auspices of the IMC?
The doctors that we sent are doctors from Jordan, who work in our Jordan-based programs. Most of them, they're all Jordanian nationals. Most of them were actually of Palestinian descent themselves, and all of them volunteered their time for this because the conflict was so close to home for them. And in fact, the number of Jordanians that approached IMC eager to volunteer their time and go, even during the conflict when it was extremely insecure, was really overwhelming. And we were in fact only able, because of the issue with access and permission, to be able to send 10. And
mm-hmm.
Of course there were so many more that were eager to do this. But they did volunteer their time, and they were there for 3 weeks. They had to take time out of their normal work schedule. But
mm-hmm.
IMC was able when you ask about resources, and again, thanks to the funding, money that was raised, we were able to facilitate the transportation. We were able to provide for their needs in Gaza in terms of where they're staying and provide them with food and transportation logistical support, but also to provide them with the medical supplies that they need while they're working.
Now, does the IMC restrict their efforts solely internationally, or are their efforts actually, you know, here in North America as well?
No, absolutely. I think a good case in point was our response to Hurricane Katrina, in which we were very quick to respond. We began the organization. The genesis of the organization was actually in Afghanistan during the 1980s, when we when a number of American doctors and you mentioned our founder included responded, and we have primarily worked internationally, and that's been our main area of focus. But we do have a history of responding to domestic needs when they arise.
Got it. Well, you know, I've just gotten a crash education course in the IMC in the last couple of days, and as Chris mentioned, I have just a real passion, you know, for not only recognizing other people who are giving, but hopefully getting back to the place where I'm going to have the resources to do it myself in the kind of way that I would like to. One of the things that we are doing, I think you may have heard me mention it at the tail end of the previous interview, is we're putting together a book called Kids for Humanity, which is going to outline, you know, a number of different efforts by organizations like the Fordson High School Honor Society, you know, who have made a material contribution just of their own efforts. And then clearly, you know, the money comes from, you know, typically from adults, but, you know, that they're shepherding those resources. And I would love to know about any other, you know, activity of similar groups, again, around the world that where kids are a catalyst or teens are a catalyst for helping out the IMC. So I'm going to be liaising, you know, obviously with Crystal, and you know, if you know of any other stories that we need to include, I would very definitely like to highlight that.
Absolutely. Well, Crystal's a good starting point. IMC is currently working in about 24 countries around the world. We've worked in well over 40. So we have an extensive international network, and when we put the word out that this is something that you're looking for, I'm certain that you will get a very positive response.
Yeah, actually, it's interesting. Just, you know, as Chris Bradshaw, my co-host, will tell you, there's always so much connection on our shows each week. And I do four shows on Tuesday, and one of my shows was interviewing two guys, one who was actually a journalist and the other who was a U.S. Marine. They wrote a book called Victory Point, which outlined Operations Red Wings, which was a disastrous battle where, you know, we lost major life in Afghanistan. And then the Whalers operation, where the Marine Corps actually went in and won a very, very decisive battle for freedom in Afghanistan. So I have been learning an awful lot about that region this week as well. So we'll be interested to hear more about the IMC's efforts in Afghanistan as well.
Well, we've been there. It was our starting point, and we've stayed continuously throughout and have extensive programs. So I'm certain my colleagues in Afghanistan would be happy to share their stories with you.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, this show each week, this 11 o'clock slot, is all about giving and faith in the marketplace of people who actually take what they believe and live it. And, you know, who are willing to put aside, you know, their own personal comforts and you know, really focus on other people. And, you know, Chris, as I look and the other Chris on the phone and I are in our 50s. So when we take a look at someone like you who is in your 30s and doing such amazing work, I can't wait to hear what the next several decades of your life are going to be all about. And, you know, as I look back at what you've done so far and just coming out, you know, of school and having that focus on knowing that you wanted to help and then just putting your money where your mouth was by going into the Peace Corps, that's just really, really amazing. So tell us how big your operation is in Jordan. Do you have an office there of a staff, or are you a lone ranger in Jordan?
No, we have a staff of about 25 people in Jordan. Our programs are primarily targeting Iraqi refugees, but we also have a number of Jordanian and Palestinian and others that we're serving through the kind of assistance we provide. We're working, we do primary health care support, but we also do extensive mental health and what we call psychosocial programming.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the types of people that you have working in your organization, one of the things we were talking about with the kids on the previous call was, you know, what are they going to do after graduation? You know, they're mm-hmm. each going on to college. And, you know, for teens and even parents who know that they have a child who has a giving heart, what kinds of educational background do people need? I mean, you talked about anthropology, but you also talked about going to Georgetown in international relations. When the IMC looks at hiring people, what kind of skills do you really need moving forward?
Well, if you look at IMC's employees around the world, the majority of them are going to have a background in health or medicine. I'm obviously an exception to that, but I don't have a technical foundation in either of those areas, so I'm primarily an administrator as the country director. And there are people like me, and certainly in other agencies like IMC, that is not uncommon. However, the real valuable human resources that we bring in and the people that we really value are those that do bring strong technical skills. But it can be in a wide array of technical specialties. It can be, as I said, medical professionals or public health professionals. But we also employ social workers, psychologists. We employ engineers for water and sanitation projects as well as for shelter projects. I mean, there's just a host of areas of specialties that people can bring to the table when they want to be a part of IMC. And insofar as we work around the world, the type of programming that we do is very diverse. So there's lots of areas that require very particular specialties that we're eager to get our hands on. Now, that said, one of our goals in every country we work is to try to build up the capacity of the national staff members that we work with. And that will vary from country to country, but as internationals, we're always looking to replace ourselves, essentially, and to work ourselves out of a job, so to speak.
Right.
And so a number of our programs, you'll see, are actually run entirely by national staff. And so that's something we're working on here in Jordan as well as elsewhere, and it's very common. But there's always a need for strong technical specialties. And openings are always available, but it requires certainly a lot of flexibility because of the nature of our work. We are humanitarian in our approach. We do look forward to staying in a country even after a crisis period to help in the transition process. But insofar as we're doing a lot of emergency response, these things are not scripted, and they're certainly not scheduled. And so we do require a lot of flexibility on the part of our staff to be able to respond on short notice.
Right. And I'm just noticing on your website, which is, for those who are listening to the show, imcworldwide.org, there are actually a great number of jobs actually listed, both internationally and at the headquarters, which is in they have offices in both Santa Monica, California, and in Washington, as well as a number of volunteer opportunities. And it's interesting, Chris, you know, I work with an organization here in Tampa, Florida, and as I'm sure you hear from the international news, the whole credit crisis and the mortgage crisis has had just a devastating impact on the local economy here in Tampa, Florida. And we have two things that we rely on here in Tampa, and one is just the whole real estate market, which is both commercial and residential, and then all of the different skill sets, which includes engineers and builders and all of those things that have to do with creating new places for people to live and work. And we have got 20% of our population that's unemployed right now because of that. And so we've had just a real difficulty helping people reorient themselves as to what kind of things they can do. And I know that there are some people who do have the flexibility, to pick up and leave and perhaps even take an international assignment. So I'm certainly going to pass on this resource to the folks who are heading up this group called Real Estate Lives, because I think, our whole culture is shifting. And that there are opportunities for people, even if they want to go off for a couple of years and do something with the skill set that they've had and actually make a difference at the same time.
Absolutely. Well, we certainly appreciate the support in that. And the other thing to consider is a lot of times people will look at those job postings online and look at the kind of rigorous requirements and qualifications that are listed. In fact, we take on a lot of people who maybe might not meet all of the qualifications but are very eager to get a start in this field and take them on in an internship capacity or maybe a volunteer capacity and to give them that experience and let them learn the ropes, so to speak. So it is also another option for people who might not be at that level yet.
Right. Well, there's just an amazing variety, which is why I wanted you to talk about the different people who worked in your organization, because, I think people just aren't aware of the wide range of skills that you need in an effort, such as what you're doing in your region. And, again, for those who would like to look at the website, it's imcworldwide.org, and for those that are interested in donating to the organization. The organization is a member of the American Institute of Philanthropy. It is rated very, very highly in the Charity Navigator for those of you who, do look for a measured way to know who you're giving to and how the money is going to be used. They do disclose their financials there. So, Chris, as we are kind of bringing things to a close, we have about 5 minutes left. What kinds of things would you say to someone who would consider doing the kind of work you're doing? I mean, what has it meant to your personal life? I know I happened to find just in looking for pictures of you that you just got married a few years ago and you actually got married in Georgia. How do you maintain a normal personal life, still have friends, still go water skiing and all the things that you love to do? And also get so embroiled in such tragedy and keep a balance in your own life?
Well, I mean, it's definitely a challenge, and that's the first thing people need to understand. There's tremendous number of rewards in doing this. There's so much that we take out of it personally. When I say we, referring to me and my colleagues that have been in this industry, and we gain so much from the people we work in and the places that we work in, and oftentimes the greater the hardship, the more rewarding it is. And we just develop, lifelong friendships, and, my network of close friends and colleagues extends around the world because of that, and that's tremendously invaluable. But at the same time, there's a lot of sacrifices that come with it, and you have to be ready to accept that. I don't get to spend the time at home. I miss home tremendously. My family's there, all of the friends that I grew up with, and you get to see them once a year, maybe once every 2 or 3 years. There's obviously the hardship of living in the places that we work in under strenuous conditions, whether it's in Iraq, Afghanistan, Somalia, the DRC and the Congo, just all over the world. These are not places with a tremendous amount of luxury, and that's not what we're getting in the job to do. So there's the personal sacrifices and the hardships that people have to be prepared to accept if they're looking to do this work. And it's not for everybody. in fact, even the most well-meaning people. And it's one of the reasons why it's hard to find good staff members that we can keep on board for years, because there's so many personal sacrifices involved. And in fact, for me, when I chose to start a family, which I did recently and have young kids, I basically gave up the possibility of ever, it really limits the kind of places I can work with IMC, for example. I'm not going to take a posting in a dangerous environment, such as Somalia, for example. I can't move there with my family. So I've been fortunate to have a posting in a country like Jordan, which is safe and comfortable and convenient, but that's the exception for the kind of countries that IMC works in, and not the norm. So it is very difficult, and people have difficult decisions to make, and it's not a decision you make once and move on it. It's something that you have to come back to and reconsider year after year.
Absolutely. Well, Chris, it has been an absolute delight to get to know you this morning. And, you know, for those who are considering a career in this kind of very, very active philanthropy of actually, you know, spending time with an organization like IMC, again, there are a lot of opportunities currently available. For those kids who are trying to figure out what they want to do, knowing that there are a lot of other options other than just going into corporate America and you know, the traditional job market, I think you've given us some really great examples of things that kids can study and how they can focus their efforts. So you just have a great evening, and congratulations on starting a family. That is going to be your next amazing journey.
My next challenge, right? Well,
absolutely.
Thank you so much for having me. And you know, before I sign off, I do just want to give a special thanks to the students of Fortson High School, the community of Dearborn. You know, we understand very well what the situation is with the economy these days and how much it affects everybody. And as a result, the funds that we're able to raise for some of the, you know, most needy and impoverished people around the world has really dropped. And so for them to reach into their pockets and make such a considerable contribution to help the people of Gaza is just, it's been really wonderful for us. And there's so many grateful people, not only within IMC, but in Gaza, who we've been working with, that if I could humbly, on behalf of all of them, express our gratitude, I'd like to do that. So thank you again for having me.
You know, God's protection be on you and your family and on all of your efforts. And I just want to applaud you for the kind of dedication that you have shown in your career choices.
Great. Thanks again for having me.
Okay. Take care, Chris.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Oh, Chris Bradshaw, this is one of our best, I'll tell you what. You know, this one came a little bit out of the blue because I set out to find kids, but as I kind of looked through the tail of this story, you know, landing Chris on the show this morning was just a real treat.
I'm glad that I got to just listen mostly because that's what I wanted to do. I just wanted to kind of live inside of them and get their energy and get all of them. It was just wonderful. It was just wonderful. Thank you, Chickie, for finding this group. And
well, again, you know, there's so much that goes on behind the scenes. And I will say, you know, that certainly the high points for me for this week, and I know you had a busy week. I don't know if you had a chance to listen to any of Tuesday's show.
Yes, I did the entire show. It was wonderful.
Well, my high points were absolutely the author of Victory Point and the Marine that was featured in that book, and you're going to have to try to get a hold of the book. Well, actually, I've got a galley copy of the book, and they sent me a final copy, so I'll send you the galley copy, because what an awesome writer Ed Derrick is, and he's also an amazing photographer. He caught some images of what was going on in Afghanistan, and of course, all of his activity there was actually after the fact, which when you're reading the book, you think Ed is there for the entire thing until you realize that he's in every scene of the book, which wouldn't have been possible.
Oh, right.
Right? Because you can't be in the helicopter, in the Black Hawk that's coming in, you know, to do the rescue and also be the one being rescued. But he had such an amazing way of telling the story in the first person from the individual that was there. And even in the front part of the book where he's talking about the history of Afghanistan, it was like reading prose. And, you know, I don't want to minimize our first guest on Tuesday, which was Camille Landau. And Camille is an entrepreneur, which, you know, again, is a frontier that a lot of people never reach. So we've talked about a lot of frontiers this week. And we did start off on Tuesday morning with Camille, who left a corporate job, and although she wasn't on our corporate escape artist show, she was talking about, you know, what it takes to see a need and to, you know, think about ways to fill it. And, you know, I think that is a thread that went through a lot of our shows this week.
Well, my favorite thing was Camille, which I could tell. I mean, you know, when you listen to the podcast afterwards, it really does feel like you're listening to it, you know, live.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like calling in, and I was laughing during your section with Camille because of her whole blinded by love.
Yes, that was my favorite, too. So why don't you tell our audience what was behind that?
Well, knowing you and you having spent so much time with your startup, right, and the fact that it's still alive but hasn't kind of turned the corner yet, and knowing that you were so devoted to that, I thought that when she described her concept of how driven she was to invent her product, right, which is ReferQuest, which is about trying to find things. It's like taking barter to the next level, taking Craigslist to the next level, taking all of these things, you know, the want ads, how do we find things, and offering a referral fee to people for helping you find what you need. But when she told about the passion that this concept of ReferQuest just kept coming back, wouldn't leave her alone, right? It was waking her up at night. And then while she did it, she was just kind of ignoring all the warning signs of why not to do it, et cetera, et cetera. And then she compared that to being blinded by love when we first meet someone and we're so infatuated and we just won't see any of their foibles. And, you know, it is so true. When you are passionate about something, I don't care if it's being an entrepreneur or anything else, you are blinded by love. And it just reminded me of all the experiences we've had with entrepreneurs, whether it's ourselves or
right,
others that we're working with. So I just knew that was a great way of thinking about it.
Well,
but
it was, and I love how she is already thinking about, you know, kind of the next horizons, you know, that she's going to go after. And she and I have had a lot of contact since the show, which has been
good.
Very fun. And we're going to open up a special page for the Executive Girlfriends group, which you and I both participate in, where the Executive Girlfriends group is going to have a way to actually share in the referral fees from the referrals that come out of our group. And so she's already worked on this program, which we know in the travel industry is an affiliate model.
Yeah.
And so I'm very proud of her, and she's doing a lot of things right. So I think they're going to see a lot of success. You know, I will predict that it will not be long before somebody acquires her, because I think she really hit on a really, really important model.
Absolutely. And then you shifted to the group that you've already talked about.
Oh, yeah. And again, I just want to mention again the book, which is called Victory Point. It just came out on Tuesday. So we had the interview on the day the book was released, which was actually by design. I had met one of the individuals who told me about Victory Point at an event during the Super Bowl here in Tampa. And somebody said, oh, you got to talk to JJ, and he, you know, he's a Marine, and you know, and I really was trying to figure out how I was going to fit the subject into the show. But, you know, what we ended up doing
was
talking about leadership.
Exactly. Once you did that, it was obvious of how that fit in.
And who would think that a 23-year-old who actually turned 24 right during the critical mission could actually be such an awesome leader? And I don't mean that disrespectfully to young people. I know a lot of times I talk about the difference in the work ethic of older individuals and, you know, what's going on with the current generations who are coming out of school. And you know, it isn't bad, you know, or good. It's just different. And, you know, a lot of times we don't see the same workaholic nature, which we have somehow deemed to be good work ethic, which actually the kids that are coming out of school are thinking, you know what, they grew up with parents who are workaholics, and they don't actually think that's a good thing. But, you know, what came out of this for me, Chris, was just an amazing respect for the Marine Corps, for young men like JJ, who went by the name of Connie in the book. His last name is Constant, with a K. And, you know, how I am going to recommend to leaders that I know who are looking for up-and-coming talent that they really need to consider former Marines. And I'm sure that the other service branches have similar sets of talent. But, again, to think about what these guys do under pressure, you know, I would love to see some of that come into the boardroom.
I couldn't agree with you more. I couldn't agree with you more. And that was just a wonderful, wonderful session. And then afterwards, we talked to the Blitzmaster.
We did.
Well, you did.
Back by popular demand, Andrea Sittig-Rolf was back again. And she has an amazing process and just so ultra practical. I mean, this is what I love about it. Is, you know, when you actually need to start sitting down and making phone calls, you know, to get an appointment to do something, whether it's to sell a service or whether it's to sell a product or even just to learn about something new or to get a job interview, that there really is a process that you have to go through. And the thing I love most about it, and she talked about it last time she was on as well, is you don't give the whole story when you leave the voicemail.
Right. And, you know, and some of the little smart little tips and tricks, if you will. And then I loved her, well, just the fact that we all need phone etiquette and that voicemails are about teasers, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's all about getting a conversation. And then her, you know, learning how to overcome all the objections, her little story about overcoming objections to even attending her seminars, which was pretty cute, and then the comparison of overcoming objections in business to overcome rejections in your dating life.
Right.
That was hilarious.
It was, and she actually has a channel on YouTube, which I believe people can search for. Just even if you just typed in Sittig, Sittig, I believe it will come up. And
I did.
She's got a lot of those little, you know, 3 to 5 minute vignettes, which is a perfect length of time if you just kind of need a shot in the arm. You're getting ready, you know, to start making phone calls. You know, you can listen to those and just get some great insights.
Well, yeah, and I have to say I did. I did go look at that, and I have a girlfriend in the sales space at the moment. I mean, not that we don't all have friends in sales, but right now in sales, no matter what you're selling, everything is a little low. So I think our sales friends are probably some of the most stressed employed people that we that we know in our lives. And I think her little three-minute vignettes are just the kind of uplifting, motivational thing that everyone in sales needs right now. And I think you're right about whether it's selling widgets, right, or selling ourselves looking for jobs. So
right.
I really suggest that everybody do go onto YouTube and look at that. There's a whole series of the little three-minute videos. Really well done.
Yeah, she's just terrific, and I love her laugh. She's got such an infectious laugh.
Yeah, it's wonderful to hear her. It is. I agree with you. It's great to listen to her. And
yeah,
then
and
you
there's
go
somebody
ahead.
That there's somebody that she reminds me of, because every time I hear her laugh, I feel like I'm hearing a good friend. And maybe it's just that I've interviewed her now three different times. That could be it. That she has become a friend from afar. I haven't
there
met
you
her
go.
In person yet.
Well, you know, these days I don't know that meeting someone in person is a requirement anymore. And some of our friendships are much closer, long distance and unmet than one would have thought possible in the past.
Right.
Then you had another repeat, which is your kind of regular weekly Tuesday closing up your show with Pamela and Corporate Escape Artists. And I love her voice as well.
Right.
And it's just soft.
It is soothing.
It's extremely feminine, which you know, of course, I'm jealous of a little bit. And it's just wonderful. And she had on Mr. Miller.
Right, Barry Miller, who has been a professor. He has been in the corporate world. Actually left and formed his own consulting firm and now is back in academia doing coaching and helping folks out. And he's just a spitfire. I loved, you know, he's 60-something.
I was going to say, was he 60 or 70? I couldn't remember.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's 60-something. I didn't
okay.
ask his actual age, but at some point in time in the interview, he did refer to that.
He did. It was funny that he brought that up.
But it's so cool that he was knowledgeable about social media.
Well, in his own defense, though, he did say that he did something once and suddenly he was an expert. But I think with his generation and with the public nature of some of the things that he does, that absolutely he was. And, you know, a face to say, you know, this don't be frightened of this stuff.
Right.
You know, it is the next, it's okay. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. So he basically was talking about just helping people figure out who they are, what they want to do. And
what do you want to be when you grow up?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I mean, I think that is just very, very timely. And so then shifting to this morning, you know, we always start our Thursday morning show off with Phil and Amy. And the show is called Real Life Renovations, which is about kind of how do you want to be, you know, once you figured out who you want to be, you know, how do you want to be? And we heard Lolo's story, and I've heard a lot about Lolo from Phil and Amy. And Phil and Amy, for those who didn't hear the show this morning, they were finalists in last year's Biggest Loser. And what I didn't know until this morning was that Lolo stood in line with them at the casting call and that Lolo, you know, didn't get on the show. And wasn't, you know, able to take advantage of the show's infrastructure, which is what really helps as a catalyst to get you on the road to losing weight. And that Lolo had to wait, you know, 7 months to see them again and then realize that here they were, collectively had lost 250-plus pounds, and she was still the same weight as when they first met. And I think it's just so cool that they welcomed her not only into their business but into their home, and that she's now kind of their right-hand person in growing the business that they're building.
You know, all of that was wonderful, but the thing I kept harping on, and you just mentioned a little bit, but I think the angle of it that really touched me this morning as I listened was the intuition that we have, following our gut that we have, and how often we don't do that.
Yeah.
And she did it. She was broke. She had a girlfriend. She got in line. She got herself there. She met these people. She didn't even have enough money to have lunch. They invited her to lunch. She said yes, you know, instead of
right.
being too embarrassed to have somebody buy her lunch. She got to know them. And the whole purpose for her to have gone was to meet them, if you want to look at it that way. And, you know, anybody with any sense right? The kind of sense your grandmother tells you you're supposed to have, would not have picked up and gone there, would not have gone back again, would not have done so many of the things that she followed her instincts or her intuition or whatever you want to call it, and she followed it, and this is how it's turned out, and it's been just such an amazing thing. So I loved that aspect of the story. This is my favorite part.
Well, it is, and we actually had a number of people calling in, and I feel badly now that I didn't start taking their questions earlier because we had a couple that didn't get to ask.
Oh, really? Oh, my gosh. Well, you know what? But that's, you know, it was probably the most call-ins we've had.
Yes, yes, and that really hasn't been our focus to build that up, but I actually asked Phil and Amy to get a couple of success stories so that people can start hearing those things. That, yeah, it's one thing when you go on a TV show that you can lose weight, but, you know, how do those of us who have real lives do it?
Right.
You know, who aren't off, you know, on a farm somewhere. You know,
talking about yourself there, are you? Are you preparing for your own 90 days?
Oh, I am backsliding.
Oh, there's no such thing. I mean, the whole point is that it is always, it's always a moving target, right?
Well, it is. And, you know, each week I know I've got this show to keep me accountable. But, you know, I haven't done the kind of physical workout, which is always my breakthrough. I don't have a real eating problem, and I really do understand the eating every 2 to 3 hours. And, you know, now that I work at home, it's a little bit easier. It's just keeping the right things in the refrigerator, which is one of the things that I'm going to ask them to focus on next week. And that is, what are the steps that you need to take? What things do you need to clear out of your pantry? What things do you need to make sure you stock in the refrigerator? Some of those practical substitution tips, you know, like substituting mustard for mayonnaise on a sandwich, which, again, I mean, I learned those things years ago in Weight Watchers, and, you know, but you know, do I still do them? No, I happen to really enjoy the taste of fat. Now, fortunately for me, I'm not a sweets eater, so, you know, I'm not attracted to cookies and, you know, I mean, I do like a little bit of dark chocolate, but with a great glass of red wine. So my calories all come in the form of wine, and, you know, just need to make sure I'm keeping that under control.
Well, I look forward to that. I think that's going to be really interesting as we begin that. So when are we starting?
Well, there are a couple of things that I need for Phil and Amy to get in place. I think we are likely going to wait until the 30th, which is just before the beginning of May. They're also going to be here in Tampa for a Tampa 90-day challenge that they're picking
kidding.
Up here. No, no. So I'll send you that date, and maybe you might want to take a trip to Tampa. It would be
jealous.
Great fun.
I'm jealous.
Anyway, well, let's shift over to the last two interview spots, which those kids from Fordson were just amazingly articulate.
I loved them. I want to meet them. I want to hug them. They were so cool. And, you know, National Honor Society is often just a certificate you get, and there's no real club sometimes.
Right.
You know, it's all dependent on that. And I think the teacher, the sponsor teacher who got on, I'm sorry I don't remember her name, but I think one of the things she said was the most important was be there for them, but get out of their way. And get out of their way. Let them do it. Don't poo-poo things. Don't think of all the reasons this is not going to work. Their energy, their passion can push things through and make things happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, I mean, they quite literally went door to door. They didn't talk a lot about the details of that. But, you know, one of them was telling me yesterday on our pre-call that they went and walked into a doctor's office.
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor's office was full, you know, patients sitting around waiting. And the nurse or receptionist said to him, well, the doctor's not here right now. And he's looking around the waiting room. He says, there's no doctor here. And she kept persisting, and you know, and again, I mean, I'm not sure whether they actually opened their checkbook or came to the dinner or not, but you know, they felt, you know, like many people in the community, again, just were saying to them, well, you know, you're never going to accomplish this, and you know, their original goal was, you know, 25,000, and they actually, you know, exceeded that by, you know, a huge margin, bringing in almost $43,000.
I was going to say, I couldn't remember how much they ended up bringing in. So
yeah,
$43,000?
You know,
oh, my gosh.
In this economy, and again, not only this economy, but remembering that they're in a suburb of Detroit, which the automotive industry and all of the supporting industries are so devastated right now, and I suspect a lot of not only the parents in the school, but the people who they were going to, you know, that their businesses are ultra depressed, you know, just because of the automotive industry. So, you know, wow, I just so applaud what they have done. And then, you know, it was really neat to circle back because quite often, you know, you look at the fundraising event or you look at that isolated incident that brings kids to the point, you know, where they want to give. But hearing the other side of the story from Chris in Jordan was just really an amazing treat.
It was awesome. It was the coolest thing. And you know, this was the first time that you've kind of planned that kind of connection. But it's often the case that we find that anyway.
Right.
But to listen and to go back to back like that, I just thank you, and I think your audience thanks you as well for having provided that, because it's the kind of thing where you're like, well, wait, what's the rest of the story, right?
Right.
And isn't there a radio personality who does a show like that? The
Absolutely.
Rest of the story.
Yep, Paul Harvey.
Well, thank you. Exactly. Well, thank you for providing that for us.
Well, and actually, you know, that's one of my ideas for this show moving forward, and you know, I'm planning on talking to a couple of folks in the media, both on the TV side, and I think about it a lot on the magazine side. Whenever I pick up a magazine and, you know, you read the article, and then you wonder, what's the story behind the story? And
Absolutely.
So I want to create that story behind the story show. And you know, we've done that a bit with interviewing authors.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, I mean, that has been great fun. And, you know, we've done over 80 shows since we launched February 3rd. No, isn't that
amazing? I
had
no idea you'd done so many shows and put together so many shows and organized so many authors. I mean, it's been wonderful. It's been such a treat to be a part of as well.
You know, but I think it will be great fun, you know, to take it to that next level and find a magazine. And I met the TravelCom Women's Forum last week in Atlanta. I met the one of the editors of Pink magazine, and I know you love Pink
as well,
and it's geared at women. And I think it would be great fun to partner with someone like that and do the story behind the story show. You know, you could do it once a month with in conjunction with their cover of whoever's on the cover of their magazine, and it would just give an interesting dimension, I think, to their readers.
You know, there's another article I read, press release actually, that I read yesterday in the Wall Street Journal, I think, about a company called TrueSlant.com, which is a combination of kind of social media and journalism. And
mm-hmm.
you might want to check that out too.
Oh, sounds interesting.
TrueSlant.com, just launched.
Well, I think, you know, again, just to close on the IMC interview that we did with Chris Skopeck, the other thing that really impacted me as I was doing my research on them was this whole issue of how many jobs there are that are available in this particular sector.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and I think people who have a certain level of skill set, and you know, you just think about operations or HR, you know, you don't think about there being opportunities in an international organization like this where you could take the skills that you used in the travel industry and, you know, transport it. And, you know, I mean, I was just looking at all the different jobs, and, I mean, they have about 20 or 30 jobs listed here. You know, now granted, some of them are in you know, places that it's going to be tough to get people to go to. You know, country director for Afghanistan is open. You know, put your hands up. But, you know, for somebody who's got a heart for giving and, you know, who understands the power of giving to other people and putting humanity first, I mean, that could be the job of a lifetime.
You know, yes, and now is the time sometimes to pack it up and go try that. And I remember, you know, early on in your shows, you had the guy called, what was it, Escape 101, was that?
Yes, absolutely.
Escape 101. It's like this is the perfect time to take the Escape 101 concept,
right,
but turn it into going to work for a nonprofit and leaving the country. And, you know, he was talking about the volunteering aspect of Escape 101, right? But this is, let's get paid. You know, we're not going to get paid the same that you had in another salary, but just like Chris said, you get paid in a whole different kind of compensation.
Well, and you get to leave a legacy. And with that, we're going to close for the day. Thanks so much, Chris.
Thank you, Chickie.
For more information about Solutions Live, please see www.solutionslive.blogspot.com. That's Solutions with a Z. I trust that today's show provided some information and some inspiration. Go out and begin to leave your legacy today.